tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is the 1st of May 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. It's Beltane. It's May Day. It's a big communist holiday, but before that, it was also acknowledged, and it was a big part of our traditions in Europe. We would have maypole dancing, and it was about celebrating being halfway through spring and getting into summer, into the summer end of spring, and it's beautiful sunshine outside, and I'm wondering what the weather is like over in Texas, where our esteemed special guest resides, Mr. Grandpa Dan. Grandpa, how are you doing, sir? How is life treating you?
Everything is inverted because y'all are having sunny weather, and currently it's dreary British weather here. I'm kind of covered in blankets here in the prestigious recording studio, and it is rainy and dreary outside. I'm really not feeling it, but other than that, I'm doing just fine, and it's great to wrap up another week, and it looks like we're going to have a fun story this week, and no, it does not involve transgenders.
No transgenders in today's story, but it does include some topics that we are quite familiar with, illegal immigration, people wanting to deport foreigners from their countries, foreigners causing trouble in their countries. But this has a bit of a twist to it because we're actually talking about South Africa, and we're not talking about whites protesting blacks coming into South Africa. We're actually talking about black South Africans who are not happy about all the other black Africans that are flooding into their country and causing all sorts of problems, in the same way that it causes problems in Europe when we have the same issues. This article actually comes from Breitbart for once, instead of the Daily Mail or GB News. They say over 300 people marched against mass migration and undocumented immigrants in Pretoria, South Africa, on Tuesday. So not just illegal immigration, mass migration. Police stepped in to prevent physical confrontations when the marchers entered a district of the city with a heavy immigrant population. I mean, that is quite a provocative thing to do as well. I mean, you wouldn't get that over here in Britain. They wouldn't allow a nationalist group to march through a heavily colonised part of Britain. I can remember they wouldn't allow Britain First to go marching with crosses through a Muslim area. So in South Africa, they allowed the marchers to go through this part of the city that had a heavy immigrant population. But as we'll see later on, the immigrants were advised to stay indoors. The demonstration was organised by a civic group called March and March, which has accused the South African government of not doing enough to enforce immigration and citizenship laws. The group demanded mass deportations at a previous rally in March. And that's just like Rupert Lowe. He's demanding mass deportations. Famous quote of his is saying, "Millions must go." Most of the same allied groups attended both the March and the April demonstrations, including the Action SA political party and Operation Dudula, an anti-immigration vigilante group whose name is taken from a Zulu phrase that means to force out. So they are literally going after these foreign immigrants themselves with a vigilante group. They're not just actually protesting here. I get the suspicion here that the way that these black Africans treat these black immigrants is very different to the way that we have to treat them over here in Britain. We have to be very careful about the things that we say, whereas it does look as if they are directly targeting these immigrants for the problems that they're causing in South Africa. Grandpa, what do you make of this? It's rather different than our usual fodder, isn't it?
Well, the Zulus don't play around. You know, I got respect for the Zulus. I mean, they've always, no matter what system they're living around, they always kind of keep themselves as an autonomous people. They stand their ground. I respect that. I think you got to respect that. I was wondering, I was sitting here thinking about, the previous apartheid regime. And, you know, how was immigration handled under apartheid? But now you see that regime got did away with it. I'm not saying apartheid was necessarily some super great perfect system either, but you always see the same pattern, don't you? I mean, they did away with the previous and they got more democracy, and time after time after time things get worse. The people get, I know you're familiar with this, Finn, but I remember, you know, there's been interviews where, you know, talking about the economy in South Africa, and black South Africans were like, you know, bring back apartheid. It was better. We had more money. You know, the system worked better. You always see the same pattern. They bring the quote unquote, the democracy to a country and everything goes downhill. Everything gets worse. I don't know what the immigration policy was during the apartheid days, but I don't recall ever reading about demonstrations against mass migration or illegal immigration being necessary. But see, this is what you get, and whether it's in South Africa or Britain or anywhere else, you know, you get the same patterns over and over. And we're supposed to somehow believe this is all coincidence, that in all of these different countries on all the different continents, under the democracy system, you get the exact same policies and the exact same responses. You know, right here, the government is, you know, we're trying to figure out what to do. You know, like it's some sort of complicated thing. You didn't have the problem before. Why do you have the problem now? Why don't you just do what you did before? Once again, representative that they don't actually want to fix it. And in the case of the South Africans, you know, they're out protesting. Is the government actually going to do anything different? I think as we get through the story and finally get to the government's actual response and what they're saying, no, they have no intention of listening to the people. Once again, shining the light on the lie that the democracy has anything to do with the will of the people. We have mass demonstrations here in South Africa against this policy, and they don't care. The government doesn't care. They're going to do and what they're going to do. Now, that could change because, as I said at the beginning here, is the Zulus don't play. And, you know, they have vigilante groups where the British will sit around and not just the British, but, you know, British will sit around as an example and worry about, you know, I dare not tweet this because I could get a visit from the Boppies. See, the Zulus aren't necessarily, they're not worried about tweeting and getting in trouble with the Boppies. Because the Zulus don't play. They're kind of semi-autonomous. I doubt the South African police are going to go and harass the Zulus because it could turn extremely violent extremely quickly. So in the case of South Africa, there's more potential for these protests to actually bring about some sort of change because they're liable to get a little more spicy.
Well, there is definitely more potential for conflict there. I think you make a good point that wherever we have democracy, we have open borders and mass migration. And if the people don't want mass migration and open borders, and if they actually have a politician that speaks out against it, then that politician will be told that he is threatening democracy in the same way that Donald Trump was threatening democracy and Viktor Orban was threatening democracy. And it seems that democracy is inexplicably tied in together with this idea of open borders and allowing anybody into your country and replacing one the population that don't want migration with another population that really don't care about migration. It should be written into a country's constitution that the government are not allowed to replace one voting demographic with another voting demographic, because surely that's really harmful to democracy. That's cheating democracy if you're just going to replace one set of voters and replace them with another set of voters which are going to vote in the favor that you want. Well, as with the previous event, March and March's demonstration on Tuesday largely consisted of black Africans speaking out against other black Africans. South African anti-migration activists are particularly critical of migrants from Nigeria, who they accuse of burdening South Africa's welfare and law enforcement agencies. And just before we went on air, I thought I would look up the IQ. And the South African average IQ, they say, Google says, it's Google AI, says 93 to 94, which is pretty good for Africa. It might be bumped up a bit by still having some white South Africans there who would probably have IQs higher than 100. But the European IQ is 100. So for South African average IQ to be 93, 94, that's very, very high for Africans, especially when you compare it with Nigeria. And the same AI told me that in Nigeria, the average IQ is 67 to 71, which is 30 points lower than the average European IQ. That is a big difference there. So they're probably quite correct when they say that these Nigerian migrants are burdening the welfare and the law enforcement agencies. And one other point that I should make as well about this, just thinking about the average Nigerian IQ, I mean, it really says that Kemi Badenoch is an absolute, must be a tiniest minority of Nigerians that has an IQ higher than 100. I mean, she clearly has a high IQ, but she actually comes from a race of people that have an average IQ of 67 to 71. So that is quite some achievement. And I should imagine that if she was actually in office in Nigeria, she would probably be of great benefit to the Nigerians. But instead, she's over here leading the Conservative Party. Well, getting back to this article here, March and March founder Jacinta Ngobeni-Zuma, a 39-year-old black radio personality who established the organisation last year to protest the impact of mass migration upon employment, education and public safety, said on Tuesday that many of the migrants flooding into South Africa are criminals fleeing prosecution in other countries. Surely that couldn't be so. I mean, that's exactly what everybody is saying in Europe, aren't they? That a lot of the people that are coming in, especially the illegal immigrants, are actually criminals in their home countries. This radio personality, he said, they are not victims. If you walk down the roads, you will find that they take buildings. There are drugs. There is prostitution. There are cartels. There are mafias. So everything in this country is a fertile ground for criminals to thrive, she said. I was thinking that it was a male. It's actually a female here that is against mass migration. Again, that's not something that we're used to seeing in Europe. It's usually male voices that speak out against this and female voices that cry out for more refugees and say refugees are welcome here. Doesn't actually say anything about counter-protests here either. I mean, it does seem as if the South African feeling is against this, and with good reason. And it does seem similar to the complaints that are made in Europe, that the people that are coming in are all criminally minded. And you have to wonder if all the prisons are empty in some parts of Africa, because that seems to be what they're implying here. And if you believe some of what Donald Trump says, the prisons are empty in South America. I mean, what country would want to keep its criminals there if there was another country that they could encourage them to move to? So, I mean, there probably isn't an official policy of sending these people into those countries, but they probably do get some kind of help, I would have thought, because it's obviously going to be a benefit to the country itself to get rid of its criminals. So I do find it surprising that the allegation in South Africa that criminals are fleeing other countries in Africa to come into South Africa, I do find it interesting that that is the same allegation that gets made wherever this mass migration is, that a large portion of the people that are coming in are actually criminals. And if they went back home, they'd get into trouble. I mean, that's what asylum seeking is. If you're claiming political asylum, you are saying that the official authorities in your country are coming after you for something because you've broken the law in some way. That's what claiming asylum is. It's perhaps they have different laws in Europe. For instance, in Europe, where we have all these gay-friendly laws, effectively, and in countries in Africa, you have countries where homosexual activity is still illegal. So they can say, oh, well, I'm a homosexual and therefore I need to claim asylum, and they'll get given asylum. But it might well be that they're actually a housebreaker, you know, a burglar, or they've been mugging people or robbing people or raping people. And it's all gone on top because people know that they're the ones that are guilty. So they end up fleeing to another country to get away from it. And that seems to be this accusation here. Grandpa, any thoughts on this? I know there are a lot of criminals amongst the South American refugees that are coming to America. Donald Trump, I think, has actually done a good job of highlighting the tendency of them to be criminal. Any thoughts on this quote here?
We've talked about this before. I just in the past week or two. Of course, these countries, you know, the countries that are sending the quote unquote migrants, of course, they're going to empty their prison. I remember we had this discussion, and yeah, of course. I mean, if you're sitting in a country and you know these other countries are just letting them go in, what are you going to do? You're going to empty your prisons. Why are you going to sit here and pay to guard these people, feed them, shelter them, and provide for them when you can just open up the prison, take them to the border, and march them across? And of course, they're going to take the deal because being free in another country beats being in prison anywhere at any time. And again, you see the pattern over and over. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what country it is. You know, you see whether it's South Africa, we were talking about it in Britain. They empty the prisons because why wouldn't? So what you get in these migrants are not people seeking to, you know, and this brings up the whole point where you know, they point out the demographics of these migrants. You know, on the one hand, they tell this lie, this story, this narrative to the native populations of, oh, these are poor refugees fleeing, you know, a civil war, an oppressive government or whatever. And then you look at the demographics and there's like hardly any women and children. They're all young, military aged men who also happen to most of the time have a criminal record, because again, who's doing the crimes, your burglaries, your rapes, your, you know, arsons, whatever, there's generally going to be younger men. That's why the demographics are younger men, whether you're talking about flooding into Europe or you're flooding into South Africa. Again, these other countries, of course they do this. Of course they empty their prisons out and export their issues. It saves them money, cuts down on their societal problems, and let these other people deal with them and take care of them. None of this is surprising. Now, what is interesting is the fact that, again, whether it's Europe, Britain, or here, South Africa, you see the same patterns playing out over and over and over again in the supposedly different independent countries. That seems kind of weird, doesn't it? And going back to what you were opening with, talking about these claims of a threat to our democracy. And it goes back to always demand a definition, because, you know, when people generally hear democracy, they think it means something to do with voting, and it does not. We should demand. They go on about our democracy and the democracy and all of that. We should demand they tell us a definition. Exactly what do you mean by democracy? Because whatever definition they're operating is not the same definition that the people are operating. It has nothing to do with the will of the people. It has nothing to do with voting. If it did, then mass protests would always equal some sort of government response to the people voicing their discontent. And yet, time and time again, you do not see that. You see the government indifferent to protest, indifferent to mass discontent. They try to tamp it down, try to crack down, try to, you know, shut down people being able to speak about it. If the democracy is about the will of the people and voting, then protests should be a big red flag that, oh my gosh, we're missing the signal. We need to be responsive to the will of the people. It's time to demand a definition. What is this our democracy, this democracy that they're talking about? Because obviously they're using a definition that is quite different from everything else. And as a final point, you were talking about they need to have it in the Constitution. These laws don't mean anything. It's no different. We know at this point it's been demonstrated that the concept of quote unquote international law is a joke. It doesn't exist. It's just a rhetorical tool. I know Matt Johnson has pointed that out for years. Well, now it's demonstrated. You know, I mean, Trump has just flat out said he doesn't recognize any quote unquote international law. International law doesn't apply because, yeah, who's going to enforce it? What people are going to have to realize is the same concept applies to domestic laws. It doesn't matter if you put it in the Constitution. It's just there as a rhetorical tool. They'll give it some, they'll give it a little attention to keep people buying into the system. We see it really a lot here in the U.S., you know, oh, the Constitution. And they'll pay it a little window dressing. It serves as a fig leaf. They'll once in a while say, oh, well, they're going to have a court hearing about this, or because, you know, we got to follow the rule of law and the Constitution. But at the end of the day, it's a piece of paper and it doesn't mean anything. And more as the system continues to go mask off, you know, if anything, it's a set of rules to be applied to everybody else. It for sure doesn't apply to the ruling elite or to the government. It's just more rules for the plebs, definitely not for the ruling class.
Well, you mentioned a protest there over here at the moment in Britain. We've had two Jews were stabbed. One of them's been released from hospital. Another one is in a stable condition. And the government and a lot of the Jewish organizations are doing their best to try and get protests banned because of this. They're trying to get these anti-Israel actions in Palestine, these pro-Palestine protests. They're trying to get those banned because they claim that it's because people are protesting. That's why these Jews are getting attacked. Nothing whatsoever to do with Israel's behavior towards Palestine, but the fact that people are talking about it. So they will use any excuse to try and shut down protests and prevent people from protesting. And another point there, just, you know, as far as these prisons go, it does make you wonder if they're saying to them, look, we'll let you go, we'll let you free out of the prison if you agree to leave the country and go somewhere else. And I think we may even be seeing some of that going on there in some of these third world countries that don't really have much of a legal system and lots of corruption anyway. I wouldn't be surprised if they're just saying to people, we'll let you go, or you can buy yourself out of the prison if you make certain that you actually leave the country. I mean, that would be one way of getting rid of their criminals quite easily, wouldn't it? Getting back to the article here, Ngubuzi Zuma said her organization has been unfairly attacked for simply insisting on the proper enforcement of South Africa's laws. The only thing that they do is to label us as xenophobic. There is nothing xenophobic about wanting law and order in your country, she said. This is not normal migration. I say this all the time. What we are currently facing in South Africa is not normal migration, she insisted. And again, this is interesting because over here they'll accuse you of being racist. If you're in Europe, they'll accuse you of being racist. But as we see here, if you're a black African in Africa, you'll be accused of being xenophobic. And it means the same thing, of course, but they're reticent about actually calling black people racist because it's assumed that only white people can be racist. So black people have to be xenophobic. And I think when she says this is not normal migration, it's not normal migration. It's, you know, a country would normally defend its borders, and they must be seeing the same thing in South Africa that we're seeing in Europe, where the countries just don't defend the borders and allow these people in. Clearly, exactly the same thing is now happening in South Africa. Grandpa, you got any thoughts on this xenophobia slur that they're using instead of calling them racist?
Well, again, we see the same pattern. They don't have an answer to legitimate points. These protesters, these protesting groups have legitimate points. They're not following the law, again, showing that the law doesn't mean anything. It's just rules that they can impose at will. It doesn't apply to the government itself. And if it doesn't apply to the government, then laws are meaningless. We've got this mindset that laws are in place to be used against the people. But, you know, under a fair system, the law should be in place to be applied to the government, to those in power. Because, I mean, the people, just average people like you, me, and these people protesting here, they don't have any actual power. You know, so laws, when you think about it logically, laws should actually be be in place to help keep a rein on those who do have power. Laws should be in place to limit the power of the government, or for the power of the government to be abused, being used against the population. And yet we don't see that. Now, like I said, these people are all bringing up very solid points. And what happens? The system cannot refute those points. You see this all over. So what do? The same thing. Name calling. You're xenophobic or racist or what? It doesn't matter. Anti-Semitic. The pejorative, the insult doesn't really even matter. What matters is the fact that they don't ever address the legitimate points that people are bringing up. They resort to name calling to change the subject. Because time and time again, when these accusations here, xenophobic, get leveled, it changes the conversation then. So you're no longer talking about you're not following your own laws, you're not following your own rules. Now you're defending yourself. I'm not xenophobic. I'm not racist. I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm saying these things are not being, no, this is not correct. This is not lawful. You know, instead, the conversation, the energy gets sucked out of the room, and now everybody's defending themselves about whether or not they're xenophobic, you see? And it's you see the same tactics over and over. And just before I send it back to you, going back to your point about are they emptying the prisons, 100% they are, and they're not even paying for that. We have, during the Biden times, when the southern border here in the U.S. was wide open and all these people were just coming in, at some point in time, they said that the vast majority of these people at the U.S.-Mexico border were not Mexicans. They were like from Africa and or Haiti. And it's like I was raising the question back then. OK, these people are poor. These people have no money. How did they get across the ocean from there to the U.S.-Mexican border? Somebody paid for that. Their home countries didn't. So NGO money, to answer my own question, NGO money, which NGO money, 9 times out of 10, is laundered tax money from the West, from the U.S. government or whatever. So, you know, you have these people you have money going in to bring these people out. And yes, 100%, these countries, I guarantee you, they're emptying their prisons. That's why you have a criminal element, and it gets applied, I've said this before, I think kind of unfairly. You know, they say, oh, all these people from, you know, all these insert from whatever country, you know, they're all criminals. Well, no, just the ones you're seeing in your country are, because they came out of the prisons of those countries. If you went to that country, you might find that, no, they're not all criminals. You know, so this blanket impression, because they come into your country and you're like, oh, all of these people from here, they're criminals. No, they're not. They're just the ones you're getting. The ones you're getting are the ones that are actually there may actually be fairly decent people, but you're left with this impression. And then, of course, that contributes to where the government tries to come in and again with this name calling, these slurs to shut down the conversation and shut down the protesting. It's all being used again to quash the complaints of the people. And again, if the democracy has something to do with the government responding or being accountable to the people, as most people think it does, but it does not, obviously, demonstrably does not, then what is this democracy? What is their definition of it? Because again, we should force them to tell us so that we're all operating on a level playing field so we could actually have a discussion. But I can guarantee you they're never going to give you a definition, but they dang sure will call you names.
Well, calling people names has got to be the most ungraceful way of admitting that you've lost the argument, really. It means, well, I haven't got any answer to your question, so to distract from that point, I'm now going to call you names and hurl insults at you instead. It's called an ad hominem attack in philosophy, during philosophy debates. An ad hominem means you've lost the debate, basically. You can't come up with an answer. And that's what these terms are when they call them racist over here, xenophobic, anti-Semite, as you say there, Grandpa. And I mean, all these protests are doing is insisting that the laws are actually enforced. And I think that's, you know, that's pretty much what most people were protesting about when we protest against migration into Britain. We're saying, well, look, you should obey the law. It's illegal migration. They're breaking the law. They're breaking into the country. You should not then be taking them in and putting them up in a hotel. You should be sending them back to where they came from. That's what people want. We want the laws enforced. You know, you can take people's nationality away from them as well. If in Britain, if you've given them British citizenship, you can take that British citizenship away. It's actually written into the law. But they just don't do it. So it is actually enforcing the law that I think that most people are concerned about when they are protesting, or enforcing the law equally. So when you have grooming gangs that are predominantly Pakistani Muslim and you have white victims, they should be it should be a racially aggravated offence. Their prison sentence should be increased because it's racially aggravated, and it's not. I mean, this is what I was bringing up earlier about this white man that raped a Sikh girl. I don't know if I brought it up here, but I was talking about it in podcasts earlier this week. I was talking to Grandpa about it earlier. You had a white girl that was raped by an Afghan, and the Afghan was told that he would have to go to lessons on British values and consent. And you had a white man that raped a Sikh girl, and the white man got a life sentence with a minimum of 20 years because they said it was racially aggravated because he didn't like Muslims. Well, that's not enforcing the law equally, is it? And if you're going to send a white man to jail for life for raping a Sikh girl because it's racially aggravated, why aren't any of the Pakistani Muslims that were involved in the grooming gang epidemic, why were none of them given a life sentence and told that their crime was racially aggravated? So a lot of the time it is this uneven, unfair enforcement of the law that people are protesting about. This is what causes these problems. This is what these protesters in Pretoria, that they were mainly protesting about, was the law was not being enforced. Well, another speaker at Tuesday's rally, March and March Treasurer Saneli Nakambule, complained that many of the small spatza shops across the country, essentially bodegas, named with a Zulu word that means hidden because they had to do business in secret during apartheid, are, quote, owned or run by foreign nationals without proper trading rights, close quote. Since these shops pay no taxes, Nakambule said their operations placed an unfair burden on citizens who do pay taxes. March for March's platform includes a thorough audit of all spatza shops to ensure that they are run by legal citizens and pay taxes. Now, this seems familiar to me as well. I mean, I don't know if you have it over there in America, Grandpa, but on all of the high streets now in England and Wales, in small towns, you have vape shops, you have Turkish barbers with Albanians in them, Iranians in them, Turks, Iraqis, all different types of Arabs running these shops, running these vape shops. A lot of the times, nobody goes in there. You think, well, where are they getting the money from? It has to be money laundering. It's got so bad that last week there was actually a BBC documentary on this and the fact that they're selling drugs under the counter in a lot of these shops. And it's the same with the taxis. One person will get a taxi driving license, and then he'll share that taxi driving license between half a dozen other people that are all of his same ethnicity, because the authorities won't be able to tell them apart. And I think it's the same in these shops. They'll have one person that buys a shop and or plays the business rates on the shop, and you'll then end up with various different people working at it, sometimes criminals, sometimes illegals. So it's effectively a whole black market which is operating on Britain's high streets. And it looks to me as if you have the same thing here in South Africa. These shops aren't paying taxes. They've even got a special word for them, bodegas. And they're hidden because they used to have to do business in secret during apartheid. But they're not doing it in secret now. They're doing it quite out in the open, and nobody is investigating it. It is quite uncanny, actually, these similarities to what's going on over there as over here. Grandpa, do you have things like that, Turkish barbers and vape shops being run by people that speak very little English in Texas?
No, not really. I mean, if you probably went into certain areas, you might have that, but it's not widespread because we're not as far down the sewer as Britain is, as bad as it is here in many aspects. It yeah, well, no, we're not as far down the toilet as y'all are. So congratulations, you're number one. You have us beat on that. What I always wonder, though, when you see these stories and they're talking about this and they're bringing up, again, legitimate points, if you had a legitimate system, you know, that they're running these shops, they're not paying taxes. You know, but yet the regular citizens, if they don't, you know, if they miss a tax bill, you know, they're going to get hammered. And I always ask myself, them why following the rules? And this is where the system, you know, its own destruction, some of the seeds of its own destructions are planted in it. Because at some point when the protests don't work and people are like, these people should be paying taxes, we're being forced to pay taxes, and the government does not respond to that, and they won't respond to it because they don't care, then the next thing is noncompliance, and the people are going to say, okay, well, then why am I paying taxes? Why am I, if I opened a little shop here in South Africa, why am I being stupid and paying taxes? That's just dumb. I'm going to open up my own little bodega shop there and just not pay taxes and do business under the table. And this is where the system ultimately undermines itself. And it's kind of an inevitable end to a disingenuous, to an absolute corrupt system. And you're going to eventually have that point because the government's not going to respond to these people. I applaud them for their efforts. I applaud everybody for their efforts in their countries to try to make their voices heard. But the government's not going to respond. Protesting is a joke. But ultimately, then people are going to say, okay, that doesn't work. So what am I going to do? And you know, people say, oh, the answer is insert some ridiculous thing here. If it's the U.S., people say everybody needs to get their guns and go to Washington. Like, yeah, that's going to happen. Not, you know, no, what will happen then is at some point then people go, well, then I'm an idiot because I'm running a legitimate business and paying taxes. I'm going to do like these people do and just open an illegal shop off the board and just not pay taxes. And it undermines the system. The system starts collapsing in on itself. So it's kind of my little piece of positive news. These systems are not sustainable because of the contradictions built in, that at some point it is going to collapse on itself. And you're going to see that across the board on a different, you know, on different scale. But I do believe these democracy systems, they don't have a long shelf life. And I think ultimately that we're going to see that play out.
It's like the broken windows theory, isn't it? If you have broken windows in an area and nothing gets done about it, sooner or later, there'll be house break-ins, there'll be graffiti everywhere, there'll be drug dealers on the corner, and the whole place will go to ruin. And the idea is if you allow the small things to go unpunished or not fixing the problem, then the problem gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, over here in Britain, they said, well, we're not going to investigate shoplifting if it's under £200 worth of goods that are taken. So now we have a rash of shoplifting that's going on. Shops are having to lock everything down. Some parts of London, apparently, the blacks just walk into the shops, take whatever they want and go out. Nobody has to pay for anything anymore because they know they're not going to get investigated if they steal less than £200 worth. So that's the end result of it. If you allow these things to go by without doing something about them, it just gets worse and worse, like a snowball effect until the situation is too bad to do anything about it. So I think the broken windows theory there applies to what you're saying there about what these problems that we're having with democracy, Grandpa. Getting back to the article here, March and March held a similar demonstration in Johannesburg on Wednesday, at which Action SA member Themba Mabunda also pushed back against the charges of mindless xenophobia. We are not xenophobic. We just want the right thing to be done in South Africa, to put the South African first. I mean, that sounds very familiar, doesn't it? Just put the South African first in South Africa. Put the Britain first in British. He said, we do want to live with foreigners in our country, but those foreigners must be legally in the country, Mabunda said. Again, that reminds me of the civic nationalists. We just want to put a stop to the illegal migration. Legal migration is okay, but I'm sure he'll find out that even legal migration is going to cause the same problems there. South Africa President Cyril Ramaphosa did not seem sympathetic to these arguments in his address on Monday, which was Freedom Day in South Africa, an annual public holiday commemorating the first elections after the end of the apartheid racial system in 1994. Ramaphosa's Freedom Day speech condemned attacks on foreigners, celebrated the contributions made by other African nations to end apartheid, and warned citizens not to allow their concerns about mass migration to breed prejudice and hatred towards our fellow Africans. And again, he just seems to be following the same playbook that we have in Europe here, by instead of paying attention to the fact that a large number of the public are not happy about the migration into the country, he just talks about how wonderful it is and what a wonderful thing migration is. And we were talking earlier about the replacement of one population with another, and that's essentially what they're celebrating here. This Freedom Day commemorates the first elections after the end of the apartheid racial system in 1994. Well, before that, blacks were not allowed to vote, so they effectively replaced one set of voters, the white voters. They turned them into a minority by importing all these black voters. A lot of them were there already, they were living in the townships, but they effectively just changed the demographic entirely. And that's why Africa has a lot of the problems that it does today, with lots of things being run down. It has all sorts of problems. But I didn't realize it also had this migration problem, which seems to be linked with democracy itself. What do you make of President Cyril Ramaphosa's response to this, Grandpa?
Well, he's obviously really concerned about what the people want, isn't he? Like you say, it's a very reflective of the democracy. You know, going back, you were talking about the, you know, broken window sink. Well, I think what it is too, is, you know, it, the small things like that, it reflects, the reason it leads to larger issues is because it reflects the government's priority. I mean, it sends a message that they don't care. You know, when you go into an area and people take care of it, they keep their lawns nice, they keep their houses nice, you know, the criminal element is kind of put away by that, because obviously the people around there care. And if the people care about their area and the areas they live in, they're probably going to defend them. When you go into an area and, you know, the windows are all broken out and there's garbage everywhere, it sends a message that the people don't care. So that's ripe. You know, people don't care about where they live, they're not going to defend it. You put that on the larger scale, it tells you that the government doesn't care. Now, if the government doesn't care, then the government isn't going to put a lot of effort into enforcing laws and defending the people that live there against the criminal element, are they? They're just going to look the other way. If it's in a really nice area of town, the police are going to put more effort into defending that area. You see, so it sends a message. The criminal element knows that, well, in these areas, the government's not going to do anything. Obviously, it looks like trash. So, that's a part of it. And then, you know, you were talking about the shoplifting laws. Once again, we see this across the board, because they've got laws like that in certain cities here in the U.S. Same thing. They're not going to punish shoplifters. You know, they just let them go in, and they let them go in and take whatever and leave. And then they're shocked because they said, oh, well, these are just, you know, we can't waste resources enforcing these smaller crimes. But then they're shocked because predictably the other bigger crimes increase. And they act like, oh, well, this is so surprising. But no, it's not. Because at the end of the day, the people that are shoplifting, doing those crimes, are also doing other bigger crimes. You see, if they got arrested for shoplifting, that means they're not out on the street to do a drive-by or a stabbing or whatever. It's always a defined percentage of the population. Ask anybody that's ever worked in a correctional facility, a prison, and they will tell you, if they've worked there long enough, they will tell you it's literally the same guys over and over. You know, there's so and so, he's back. How long was he out this time? So when they arrest the people for the shoplifting, they're actually picking up the ones that are doing the bigger crimes. They just haven't got caught for those yet, but it does take them off the street. Little common sense, if they really wanted to address these problems, which once again tells us that they don't really want to address these problems.
Well, it seems to me they're allergic to common sense. Officials and civic activists in neighbouring countries advised their nationals in South Africa to take shelter during the March for March rallies. Ghana's diplomatic mission in South Africa told Ghanaians to place the highest priority on personal safety and take precautionary measures, while the Nigerian Union in South Africa advised Nigerians to close their shops and not go outside. It seems these were violent protests. I mean, you don't hear that over in Britain. They don't tell, you know, if you're having an anti-migration protest, anti-migration policy protest, they don't sort of advise people that aren't white to shelter at home and not go out because there's going to be violence. This is something that seems unique to South Africa, is that you actually get serious violence against the migrants over there. One migrant, Nigerian Union Chairman Oledaniyani Obodilidili, said to the BBC, "I've been harassed on Tuesday." She said, "For us, it is not about whether you are legal or not, and that is why everyone is very careful right now. As long as you are a Nigerian, you are profiled and you are stereotyped immediately," Obodilidili said. And again, this makes me think that maybe the South Africans have worked out that it's the Nigerians are 30 points lower or 25 points lower IQ than they are, and therefore it doesn't matter whether they're legal or illegal, they're going to be more likely to be crime prone, and they're going to be more likely to not be able to get gainful employment. It doesn't matter whether they're legal or illegal. If you've got a low IQ, you're going to have difficulties in life, whereas somebody with a higher IQ wouldn't have such difficulties. A heavy police presence was deployed for the march on Tuesday, watching nervously as the demonstrators and onlookers shouted insults at each other. So it doesn't appear that there was any counter-protest here. The anti-migration demonstrators, I mean, there's no Antifa basically in South Africa protesting against these anti-migration protesters. So they must have the support of the country there. I guess the people that are fulfilling the Antifa role is Cyril Ramaphosa's government. The anti-migration demonstrators frequently use the insult "Amakweri Kweri," a nonsensical pejorative intended to mock the sound of unintelligible foreign dialects. That seems a bit like Ooga Booga. Ooga Booga Booga. We have the same thing over here, Grandpa. What do you make of what's being said here?
Well, they don't have an Antifa because the government probably can't afford them. That's got to get someone else to fund, because a lot of these what you would call counter protests, especially in Europe and whatnot, I mean, they're funded. These people are paid to show up to basically protest for whatever the government wants. I'm sure the police were nervous. You know, and you know, this person, this Nigerian person, you know, talks about being harassed and how bad it is. And it's like, yeah, but it's not bad enough to go home. You know, if I decided to be an expat and go live in Mexico because it's cheaper to live there, and there were massive protests against Americans and, you know, Yankee go home, gringo go home, you know, I would say, if I was nervous about it, I would say I better go home. But you never see that. It's, you know, they say they're harassed and worried, but they're not going to leave. You have a country you could go back to if you're that worried about it. Now, I'm sure the police are nervous because, yeah, I would imagine you know, these protests here have a lot more potential to break out than, say, Patriotic Alternative in Britain is not going to break out into a violent thing. And the police know that there, you know, with all of their hyperventilating in the media to the contrary, everybody knows that it's not going to get violent. But in South Africa, yeah, there is probably quite a bit of violence. And that probably does make the system nervous because, you know, it, at the end of the day, you know, the protests turning violent are the thing that is potentially going to make the government take notice. You know, you're not supposed to say that part out loud. We're supposed to talk about, you know, the peaceful protest, but that always works. That always, that doesn't seem to get a lot of response. So here in South Africa, where these protests could probably potentially, I'm sure there's a lot of potential for them to turn violent. I'm sure that does make the system, you know, quite nervous. It's like during this latest fake assassination attempt, the staged assassination attempt over here. I think it was the Claudia Sheinbaum, very Latin-sounding name, the president of Mexico came out and said, you know, we have to, you know, violence, political violence is never the answer, which sounds real good. And then you stop and think, but the government, that is literally what they do. They have a monopoly on the use of violence. And so it's kind of hypocritical there. But yeah, you can see why the government's quite nervous with these protests here, because I would imagine protests in South Africa got a whole different flavor, just like the food, just like the cuisines, man. It's got a whole different flavor to it than protests in a place like Britain.
Well, it does seem just from the pictures associated with this news story, they're out there with shields and spears. So, yes, there is quite a high potential for violence to occur. But I think the most important thing that we can take from this is that this anti-migration sentiment, it's not unique to white people. Anybody that has a country that they care about is going to be concerned about migration and people coming into that country who did not share in building it effectively. Of course, the South Africans, I mean, you might say, well, they didn't have a share in building South Africa, but a lot of them were there in the townships and they did work there. They may not have had they may not have had enough up top to design things and be architects and create those things, but they certainly worked in them. So they certainly have put their sweat and toil into actually building South Africa. So, of course, it's going to be distressing for them to see people coming in from Nigeria with a much lower IQ and effectively making the place even worse than it already was. So people are just against migration, and for good reasons. It's logical. It's common sense. Doesn't mean that you're a racist. It means that you are concerned about your own people group. And I think it's good to see that we see this concern here amongst these black South Africans. It's good that they're protesting against this. And again, I think we've pulled out from it some quite salient points, particularly the one that, oh, there's no Antifa over there. Well, I guess that's because South Africa hasn't advanced that far enough yet that the state will then start funding a fake opposition, which is effectively what Antifa are. They are the controlled opposition against the genuine dissidents. What we have here are genuine dissidents, but there is no fake Antifa yet. I should imagine there probably will be one in the decades to come. As that's what happens in democracies. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.